It's time for another great episode of the Ringside Rant with your host from the hills of West Virginia, J.D. Justin Davis. And from Rochester, New York, this is RJ.
Today's episode is presented by Podgo. Podgo is the easiest way for you to monetize your podcast, providing podcasters with a flat rate for ad space so you always know how much you get when you include an ad from Podgo. Apply today and become a member and immediately be connected with advertisers that fit your audience. That's podgo.co at podgo.co. And be sure to let them know that RJ from the Ringside Rant sent you in How Did You Hear About Us section of the application.
Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
It's Friday. It's 9 a.m. You know what that means. Another episode of the Ringside Rant is here with you this morning. I'm the man with the magical voice, RJ. He is the man of 1,000 smoking solutions. And no, I'm not talking about 420. He is a meat smoker himself, Mr. JD, Justin Davis. One of these times I'm going to have to like not involve cooking or something for you, I guess. I don't know.
Hey, it's whatever. My kid does it every week. Yeah. By the way, that was a great interview with my kid that you did. I listened to that. That was good.
I appreciate that. Yeah, he was, if you haven't listened to it, go over to the feed, the main feed here, that was released last Sunday. And yeah, I got another big one coming up down the pipeline. So, but no, he was a great guy to talk to. I was very surprised that, I guess I wasn't surprised that he was very humbled, but just by the stuff that we've seen through AFS and, all that stuff that he's done with Pauly. And my experience with interviews is, and I've told this to many people, that when I get off the line with somebody and I remember like five more questions that I wanted to ask them, or three, whatever, more questions I wanted to ask them, then I know that I'm like, okay, that was pretty good. But yeah, that was, if you're listening now and you haven't listened to that, go ahead over there, main feed right now, and check it out.
Yeah. So seems like a pretty good dude. I hope hanging out with Pauly B doesn't ruin his character. But
well, if it hasn't ruined it by now, I don't think it ever will. But Pauly B's definitely, what did he say? It was cooking with Coyote and cooking with Coyote. I can't talk. I almost called him Coyote.
Well, he is Coyote. That's his nickname.
Oh, there you go.
That's what all the wrestlers called him.
Yeah. Cooking with Coyote and baking with Bramo. So. Which I thought he said bacon, like
well,
cookies.
Kyoto and Bromwell are both two Schittsburg Steelers fans in a pod, so they can just stay together. They need to be quarantined together, kept away from general society.
Wow. Well, if they're the Schittsburg Steelers, then we know heartbreak being Bengals and Bills fans. But
Before we get started, today, one of our good friends, top gal, Amy, having to put their beloved four-legged friend to sleep today. So, Amy, I know that you listen to this show, and we are thinking about you and your family today.
Definitely am. I sent her a little, I went online and looked up, it's just a little something, a little card, a little saying that for her dog. And with my wife being in the veterinary field, I know how important pets are, as you know, with Owen and Gianni, and how important pets are to people. They're parts of the family, you know, their kids. I really get discouraged a lot when people get mad at people saying that, oh, they're my fur kids, or whatever they call them, fur fur kids, whatever the heck they call them.
Fur babies.
Fur babies. There you go. It escapes my mind all the time. Just take it for what it's worth, man. Come on. You know, it's like if people don't want to have kids, that's their deal. If they want to call their pets their fur babies, then so be it. You know, apparently you have.
No one has ever called you their fur baby.
You're
one of those Siamese cats, those hairless cats.
Remember, hey, bald is beautiful, and you can get that over at ringsiderant.wolferapparel.com. But no, seriously, though, on a serious note, though, we really do want to send our well wishes to Amy and her family. We know how important, like I said, how important pets, dogs, cats, whatever, can be to your home and to your home life. So we appreciate you listening too as well. So, but with that being said, Justin, we're going over 1990 Great American Bash. And I legitimately thought that this was going to be a hell of a lot better for pay-per-view than it actually was going back and watching it. Outside of probably two, maybe three matches were actually decent. And obviously the main event being Flair and Sting for the title, for the big gold. Outside of that, it really wasn't anything to really write home about. You got the big names on the card: Freebirds, Harley Race, Tommy Rich, Iron Sheik, which baffled my mind. We'll get into that in a little bit, but it was just unreal. I couldn't remember how bad this match or this pay-per-view was.
Yeah, well, it's not good. You know, the announcing was good. It was Bob Caudle and JR, which is, you know, hard to go wrong with. They're not as good, in my opinion, as Gorilla and Jesse Ventura or Gorilla and Bobby. But Bob and JR are still a pretty solid duo there announcing. Bob just kind of a little, by this time, a little old school on the announcing, kind of kind of had passed him by a little bit, I think, if you listen to the show. You know what I mean? Like, by this time, WWF had the colorful Venturas and Bobby Heenan's, and even Gorilla was pretty colorful. But Caudle just seemed like that the times had kind of passed him by to me on here.
Yeah. And I think that whatever generation that you go to, as far as broadcast or commentary or whatever, you start to see that a little bit. Each generation happening towards the end of their jobs there. But at the same time, sometimes you'll get guys that'll start later in their lives and actually knock it out of the park, like a Heenan or a Gorilla or whatever. But sometimes you said all good things have to come to an end sometimes, and they have to go to greener pastures, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, then the first four matches on this show, I thought, were all in the stink category. Even the first one, which I had high hopes for, Buddy Landell and Brian Pillman. But this was really early on in Pillman's WCW run, where he was still pretty green watching this. Lord knows how much powder Landell hit up in the powder room before he came out there. But the match was a little long, and in my notes I wrote anything but snug. The working punches were terrible. Just everything was soft as a pillow. Just wasn't a big fan of that opening match. It wasn't the match I thought it would be.
Well, going back, it was underrated for what they actually did, as you said, obviously being a little bit of snug. But you can honestly see that Pillman was clearly the fan favorite, dressing up in that stupid Bengals colors.
That was the only thing I liked about the match.
That's why I was going to bring that up.
Pillman's attire was fantastic.
Well,
this would have been 2 years after the Bengals went to the Super Bowl and the year that the Reds won the World Series.
They couldn't have been that good if they cut Brian Pillman, and he was on special. He was a special teamer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I guess you got to go head first into those, the wedges there.
Yeah, I think he had some injuries too. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, this is before the major one, obviously, but one guy that doesn't get injured because he is that damn good is Mr. Rich Palladino. So let's send it up to the ring right to him right now.
Ringside Rant fans, it's the opening contest.
All right, Justin, opening contest this week. We briefly touched, obviously, on that opening contest between Buddy Landell and Brian Pillman there. Could have gone either way. Wasn't as bad as I don't think it was as bad as you thought it was, but we digress. Obviously, we're not supposed to agree to that much of anything.
Speaking of bad, wait, what's coming up, folks, because we got worse.
Okay, so you didn't think it could get any worse, according to Justin, than that opening match, but it did get worse. Next, the Iron Sheik. Yes, that Iron Sheik. I humble your ass. In WCW in 1990.
Really? Yeah. The Captain Mike Rotunda, who this is IRS in a captain's hat, like he was the captain of a ship. So against the Iron Sheik.
So I called him Mr. Gimmick Mike Rotunda. And it wasn't Mike Rotundo, it was Mike Rotunda.
You feel like IRS was the type of guy that was out to get Captain Rotundo. Like, this guy's got a boat, probably not he's probably cheating on his taxes. Probably didn't pay the right amount of taxes.
He probably has a mattress full of money. Even though it's honestly, he probably has a waterbed, so he's probably got him in like little baggies or something floating in the waterbed.
I feel like IRS would have arrested Captain Mike, taken him in.
Would it have been I would have loved to see what do they call it? A cinematic?
Yeah, Captain Mike against IRS.
Yeah, the winner's the real father of Bray Wyatt.
Yeah.
There you go. Bray Wyatt on a pole match. There you go.
And then Varsity Club Mike Rotunda could be the referee.
There you go. And then the special enforcer could be Michael Wall Street. Or Wall Street or whatever from WCW or whatever the heck he was.
Yeah, the match was fucking terrible, as you all would imagine. And I can see why WCW paid Iron Sheik to stay home for like 2 years, because if I had to watch this for another day, I'd be like, just fucking cut him a check. Tell him to sit home and drink ice cold beer.
I humble. I hack too. I fucking fuck Hulk Hogan.
No one like the Sheik, but his wrestling was terrible. His selling, the overselling just off of like punches and stuff was just so gimmicky that I couldn't hardly get through the match.
But I'm just sitting there. I'm doing it right now. I'm just rubbing my forehead, my ginormous forehead that I do have. It goes all the way to the back of my head. But I'm just like, really, if I had any more hair or any hair in general, it'd be coming out of my head watching him wrestle. And I'm not saying in 1990. But even previous to this, yeah. I was never a fan of him. And it wasn't the character. I just don't like the dude.
He just always seemed stiff as a board to me. Like, couldn't do anything in there. He couldn't run around. He couldn't jump. He couldn't do, like, he couldn't do anything. Yeah.
But the thing, that's what you got at that time frame with that type of wrestler. I'm like, at least.
Like, when you're playing a video game and you get like the worst one, that's what you have to be. Like, this one barely jumps and he can't run fast.
Iron Sheik is the Cincinnati Bengals of Techno Super Bowl.
Well, I don't know. I guess. I never saw Iron Sheik lose 4 WrestleMania main events in a row like the Bills, but you know, whatever. You know, the one thing this pay per view.
Is that the hill you're going to die on?
The one thing this pay-per-view did have was Gordon Solie speaking, going, Bob and JR going to Gordon Solie between every match. My first note I just wrote down, Gordon Solie then drunkenly said something. I don't even remember what it was, and it really didn't matter. He didn't interview anyone on his first cut to him. And then on the second cut after the old Iron Sheik match here, Solie interviews Harley Race about him and Tommy Rich's upcoming match. Mm-hmm. So that it was just a match, and then cut to Gordon. Match, cut to Gordon. Match, cut to Gordon. I thought that was a little bit boring and very repetitive.
Well, maybe they were like paying them like per appearance or something. You ever think of that?
Yeah.
I'm
guessing they were paying him by drinks. If I had to guess.
Well, then he got paid pretty well then.
I think he did.
He looked pretty plastered after he get halfway through the show and he's.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm surprised he still had both eyes open. Well, sort of.
Yeah.
But let's talk about Harley and Tommy Rich. Harley Race comes in and beats Tommy Rich, and they're selling it as an upset. Harley Race beating Tommy Rich is an upset.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it. Do you?
I don't either. No. I think maybe just because of his age and how this was kind of the end for his wrestling career.
But didn't we see him more towards didn't he go back to WWF after this?
No, he
did.
He wouldn't wrestle very much longer, and then he would be Vader's manager when Vader like in 93. Vader was there now, but
with Flair, the match against Flair at Starrcade. But I don't know. I would think that you would sell this Harley Race not as an upset. That was for what it was. That wasn't a bad match. Tommy Rich could, if you go back and watch this match, I implore you to go back and watch this because Tommy Rich could move.
Somebody say something about me jobbing a 65-year-old man.
I'm sure he could, and that paycheck was plenty green. And we all know what kind of green that is.
It was an all right match. I mean, was what it was. It's kind of a rematch from their NWA title day there in 81 or whatever the hell that was when that happened.
83. It was Harley and Flair.
Yeah, I think this would have been 81 or 2 when Tommy Rich won.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. Do you think it would have made any difference if Tommy Rich beat him? Or do you think they're just trying to give Race one last decent run before teaming him up with Vader?
I honestly don't think it mattered who won because neither one of them was going anywhere as far as that goes. So,
yeah,
it's just let them work it out. Whoever wants to do whatever can do it. I don't think there was like a big storyline built for either one of them.
Well, that seems to be the synopsis of the majority of this fucking pay-per-view outside of Sting.
If you kind of look at it. If you can't, I mean, like that first match at Buddy Landell and Brian Pillman match, that's a cold match. There's no build up to that. The second match, Iron Sheik and Mike Rotunda, that's a cold match. Mm-hmm. Third match is, you know, Doug Force and Dutch Mantel. That's a real fucking cold match. And then Harley and Tommy Rich. I mean, the only thing that's not cold about that is they had that thing, like I said, in 81, which was 9 years before this. So, really, the first four matches, there was nothing to them. There was no storyline. There was no buildup. There was no nothing. They were just cold matches to get whatever, you know. And they were all babyface wins. Also, the first, until the first three matches were all babyface wins. Doug Furness beat Dutch Mantel. My favorite part of that match was just the hair on Mantel's back, plus the super long mullet was worth watching that match.
Well, you didn't know where his head hair ended and his back hair started. I don't know if it was all one or...
That was one of the longest, most majestic mullets I've ever seen in my life, too.
I'm jealous of anybody that really has hair, but this was like super. He actually has to donate it to people follically challenged or something.
I feel like that son of a bitch has to walk into the bathroom once a week like a sheep and let his wife shave his fucking back and just shear it off and then give it to Locks of Love.
You go out in like the backyard or something and kind of do an all over kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I feel like she finds insects in there. all kinds of stuff. A whole habitat if she don't shave it for a while.
Well, what do you think the most common thing that his wife would find in his hair? Do you think it would be like pieces of candy?
I would say like some Skittles that fell out in bed and he rolled over on top of them.
But why would you eat Skittles? You could like choke on those. You know, you got to do the old Costanza from Seinfeld or something. You got to eat like an Italian sausage with honey mustard or hot mustard or something. And maybe getting too greedy at that point, getting, if I wanted like my wife to leave the bed or something, I could bring in the sauerkraut or something and go to town on some sauerkraut. And we all know what a big fan Mike Chioda and Pauly B are of, sauerkraut dogs. Have you ever had one of those?
Absolutely. I'm from Cincinnati. God. We have German shit all over the place. We're big into that.
You
can get that at the Great American Ballpark, home of the Cincinnati Reds. We got sauerkraut and grilled onions and peppers and sauerkraut, and you can get it all on there with some spicy brown mustard.
And then
is the way to do it.
And then you go directly to the medical tent at section
medical 3 facility.
No, you don't even have to leave the medical facility. Go to the medical facility. They have one inside the actual stadium because of all that food, that great food that they have. And
I'll tell you, if you really want to need medical attention, you go to the Gold Star Chili line at the stadium. And then you get about 6 of the chili dogs with the mustard and onion and cheese on top. Then you make your way over to the medical tent and maybe to some other areas.
I think I just had a heart attack just listening to you describe that.
You got
to
be a man eating Cincinnati. We don't have any of those trash plates or whatever the shit you got up there in Garbageville, USA. Garbage plate, New York.
You shut your mouth. You shut your mouth. You got to have, but the thing is, though, if anybody is in the right, you have to have a garbage plate. That's like rule number one.
Listen, I went to fucking baseball stadium in Rochester and I saw people eating that and I felt like I needed to call and get them help. Because
You were with me.
Yeah, you need to see someone.
Well, now, did you see now? I don't know if
there's macaroni salad on that shit.
Oh, just shut up.
All kinds of nasty.
Fantastic. They're fantastic. It's no different than having all that crap on the hot dog. You're telling me
chili cheese and onion and mustard, that's what's supposed to be on a hot dog.
But that's no different than the stinking garbage plate that you have hot dogs on.
By the way, do you know the difference in a 4-way and a 5-way if you're ordering Cincinnati chili?
One's more than the other?
Well, one is a Saturday night at Efren's house. That's the 5-way.
Yes.
But a 4-way is... Well, first of all, you don't really count the spaghetti. This is when it comes on spaghetti. All right, so that's a whole nother thing. But spaghetti, sauce, the chili,
okay,
cheese.
Well, what kind of cheese?
Beans it's shredded cheddar cheese, finely shredded.
Okay.
And then you get to pick, if it's a 4-way, you get beans or onion.
What kind of beans? Baked beans? Regular?
No, these are like chili beans. Yeah.
Okay.
So I go with the 4-way. I go spaghetti, chili, cheese, beans. And then you get crackers put on top too and hot sauce.
And then you go into the men's room and bite your lower lip because we'll get through it together, son.
Yeah, you guys are getting a master class in Cincinnati chili, how to eat it right here. You guys should all be thankful.
But seriously.
Amy knows. She's from Kentucky. And so does Timmy C, old summer suit. Well, they know the secret.
He doesn't count, though. He doesn't count. If he has one more hot dog like that, he's going to probably have a heart attack and die on us or something. You know, he's that old.
Well, he's not as old as some people I know that live out in San Jose, California. You know, for being an 80-year-old person, Mark Nelson really does do a lot. I'm surprised.
80? What is he? Yeah, but he's got, yeah, I know. He's like probably like 85, 90 at this point, right? He gets aged every day.
Yeah. I think Jacksonville aged him about 6 years.
I think Jacksonville aged a lot of people. Anyways, we got off to the weeds just a bit. So we'll wind it back. Try to steer it back here a little bit. We saw the Freebirds versus the Steiner brothers. And before I went, because I've watched this pay-per-view numerous times, but I haven't watched it in a year or two, whatever. And looking at the card online, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a great match. And then you see Jimmy Garvin and Michael P.S. Hayes come out with what I can only imagine is Saturday night at Efren's.
Well, it was, I don't think Efren's makeup would ever be that bad. He knows what he's doing.
Well, no, it's not the makeup. I just meant all the glitter.
The glitter, the makeup. It was really Jimmy Jam Garvin looked like he just came out of Studio 54, coked out of his mind. And, you know, Michael PSA just looked like himself. Well, but, yeah, the match itself, I wasn't obviously real impressed with that match either. I hate to be Debbie Downer. It was about what you would expect out of a match like that. But I would have liked to seen more offense out of Scott Steiner.
Well, and you could really see at this point, in 1990, you could really start to see that turn that Scott Steiner was the better Steiner brother.
Oh, he looked like $1 million in this match. Like, if I'm WCW, like, I'm looking at him like he can be our next champion eventually here. Like, this dude is everything you need, and he knows how to wrestle. He's a believable badass.
Yeah.
He can get over as a babyface or a heel, as we would later find out. But I don't know, man. I would have pushed him to the moon even back then, especially like if I was WCW around 91, a year later. I know that him and the Steiners and Mr. James Hurd did not get along very well. I think that's what hurt them there.
But why wouldn't you book him, especially here? You're starting to see him actually get a good response, one, from the crowd. Two, his in-ring stuff was great, obviously. His microphone, you put him with somebody else like a Paulie or Teddy Long, somebody like that. Have somebody speak for him. I would have put the strap on him. Can you imagine a feud with him and Sting?
Mm-hmm.
Not even in 90. I'd say maybe 92.
Or him and Flair, or, you know, him and Vader.
That would have been phenomenal. But let's transplant, get Flair out of 93 there. Put Steiner or Scott in there against Vader for in 93 for the title. Or him, Christ, even at that time, we had the International was the big gold. But that was that after this or before that?
That's after this, I do believe.
After this. Okay. So have him go against Rick Rude.
Yeah.
Can you imagine just that technical match that they two could have had? Unreal. But even after the fact, though.
I think I would have liked to have seen him paid for just a UFC-style match between Rick Rude and Scott Steiner. See who the hell wins that.
Just take all the ropes off the, yeah.
Just let him fight.
Just let him go. But yeah, it's just unreal, especially at this time, why they didn't strap the rocket to this guy and just take him to the moon, because the fans loved him. Like I said, you obviously said Hurd didn't like either one of them. So that's probably what played into the fact that they didn't get, that push. And then they leave for what, WWF in what, 93?
92, maybe. Might have been late 92. Yeah, I can't remember. Early 93, maybe. Somewhere
it had
there.
To be early, like 92, because they were at they had the best match on the WrestleMania 9 card. There against the Hedge Rinkers.
Mm-hmm.
So that was 93.
Yeah.
That was 93. That was spring of 93. Mm-hmm. So it was probably had to be an early 93, late 92. But I was never, we're the same age, obviously, growing up watching Scott Steiner's Big Papa Pump. I hated that. Absolutely hated it. But going back and watching this stuff, basically from 90 all the way up to, we'll say 94 when they came back, watch a lot of the Japan show.
96. They were WCW tag team there in 95, yeah. 96.
So you go watch that stuff. Absolutely phenomenal. And why, like I said, even why Vince didn't see it, how he did not see it in 93, 94, is beyond me. I have no, but looking back at it now, I'm like, Vince didn't know talent if it slapped him in the fucking face in 93 and 94. He had his mind on other things, obviously. But it was just, it's just unreal how they didn't do anything with him. But one thing that they did do right in his next match was Vader basically killing Tom Zink.
Yeah.
Billing him at 399 pounds.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that's being very generous because I'm pretty sure he is well over 400.
Yeah, he's a big, huge man. He come out here in his badass elephant mask. This was the debut of Vader in WCW against the Z-Man, Tom Zink. The elephant mask come out. It was steaming. It had steam coming out the top of it. Then he had the full black mask on his face underneath.
It was a full one. Yeah. It wasn't a full portioned one yet.
Right. It was black with some red, thunderbolts or something on it, looked like. But yeah, just a Vader squash match to kill Tom Zink. And he did it in about 3 minutes and that was it.
Well, pretty much you knew that was going to have to happen when he was coming over from, overseas and coming back here. And he really wouldn't have catched any steam really much until maybe late 91, getting into the 92. And then obviously 93, winning the title, going against Flair. But I think this was one of the better ways of doing it, billing him, booking him.
Yeah. Made him look like a big badass, which he was.
And Zink was selling for him, which was great. And normally you wouldn't need that, but in this aspect, you know, you wanted to make him look fucking awesome. But a couple things, then we'll get over to the next segment, is Paul Orndorff is a face at this pay-per-view. Why in the holy hell would you book Paul Orndorff as a face?
Well, they've done it a few times. He was a face in WWE too there for a little bit. I think after his feud with Hogan there in 85 or 6, I think he turned face. I don't know.
I didn't like it. I respected Paul Orndorff's ability. I think it was very, how do you say, he was very athletic.
Yeah, he kind of had go away heat for me as a kid. I've never been a huge fan. Nothing against Paul Orndorff at all, but just,
well, no, not at all. But it just blew my mind. But anyways, last thing I wanted to touch on briefly was what the fuck is up with Lex Luger's fucking promo?
Well,
he is cutting a promo to everybody except the freaking camera.
Yeah,
he's drawing his line in the air like he normally does. He's talking to the crowd. He's talking to Gordon Solie. He's basically everybody except the camera.
I just looked at my note on this, and all I wrote was Solie interviews Lex. Blah.
So pretty much anybody interviews Luger and blah. And I know he's in a good place now. I get that. But don't let him talk.
Yeah.
Do not let him talk. Put somebody with him.
His match was actually okay. Him and Mean Mark. Yeah. I liked that match for the U.S. Championship. Lex was in some rare pink tights for this show.
Was it pink? And he had what, black knee pads and white boots, right?
I think so. You don't see Lex in pink very often. And the ending was weird. Lex went over, which on what seemed like an extremely fast count from the referee. I remember that. Mean Mark went down and all of a sudden just like, boom, boom, boom. That was it. It was over. I'm like, damn, they just put the screw job on Mean Mark.
Before he even got to before he got up north. Because he was up north shortly after this.
Yes, very shortly.
Yeah, barely, because this is what? July. Of 90. He was up by November.
Survivor Series, yeah.
Yeah, by November of 91. So it wasn't too much longer after this, which We'll get into that a little bit later for in our listener question, but I like Luger and the Four Horsemen. I like Luger, like his before he joined the NWO and WCW. I did not like him in WWF. That have to do something with the booking? Yeah, but only so much you could have done with him.
I know,
they wanted him to be the Hogan-esque character. Wasn't going to happen because he didn't like to deal with all the crowds.
Yeah, and he's not what you would call a really good person for interviews. He's not a bubbly personality.
Right.
That type of thing.
Right. And he may be better now. I don't know, but just we are going off of what we know at this time just by what we've watched. Mm-hmm. So it's nothing against him personally now. It's just the fact of what we're seeing right now. But one guy that is definitely one of the most bubbly people that I know is Mr. Rich Palladino. So let's send it up to the ring with him right now.
It is now time for Rants and Raves.
All right, Justin. So Rants and Rave this week. I'm ready for this, man. I really wanted to dissect this freaking pay-per-view so much. But if I would have done that, we would have had probably about 36 different topics to cover here in Rants and Raves because the pay-per-view was so bad. But we'll start on a good note, though. Midnight Express, one of the best tag teams of all time, bar none. I know you like them. What is your favorite incarnation of the Midnight Express? Is it Bobby and Stan or is it Bobby and Dennis?
Stan Lane, Dennis Condrey,
and then Bobby Eaton.
I would have to go for me. I like Bobby and Stan better, but I know a lot of people go with the original Bobby and Dennis. But you know, it's to each their own on that. But this was one of the few good matches on this pay-per-view.
Very, very few, yeah. Because
it was the Southern Boys, the Wild-Eyed Southern Boys, as they were being called, Tracy Smothers and Steve Armstrong, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Against the Midnight Express here. And it was a very good match. They did the old, you know, heel gimmick where they keep keep Tracy Smothers from tagging out the whole time, and just keep him in there a whole long time. And then Armstrong gets the hot tag and comes in, tries to clean up. And then of course the Midnight Express cheat their way to victory in the end.
Yeah. Well, was this another thing that I love the Midnight Express and I'd like to see the, I'm more partial to Bobby and Stan. That's just me. And I agree with you on that, where a lot of people will go to the original, whether it's tag teams, whether it be factions, a lot of people tend to go to the original formation of those specific teams. But the one thing I gathered out of both these tag matches, Midnights and Southern Boys, and then Doom and Rock and Roll, why were there two different tag straps? You had the NWA World Tag Titles, and then you had
the United States
Tag Titles. Was this basically that? I'm pretty sure that this was a transition from the NWA to the WCW. That's my understanding.
Yeah.
And that's how what I took away from it. But why you're starting to look at it now, knowing what you see now with WWE with all these freaking titles. Do you think that was the case here? Or do you think that was pretty much just, like I said, just the transition between NWA, JCP to WCW?
Yeah, I think everything hadn't been consolidated, so to speak. Some loose ends to tie up on that.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure, and correct me if I'm wrong, I can probably Google it after, but if anybody wants to slide into the DMs over at _ringsideRant on Twitter and let me know, I'm pretty sure that they had a unification match for the tag straps to unify the NWA and the US tag straps. Like I said, I may be wrong. I'll probably end up Googling it once we get off of here tonight to see when it was and who it was, because it's just going to bug the crap out of me. But that was probably the only way that I figured that that's the reason why there's two different tag straps here. So we briefly touched on, obviously, the Steiner brothers as a tag team. Obviously, Scott Steiner, we went more in depth with him as a singles competitor. But where do you stand as that Mount Rushmore tag teams? Do you put the Steiner brothers on that mountain?
I think you, I mean, I,
of all time, not just here.
Yeah. I think a lot of people would, I don't know if I'm one of those people, but a lot of people would, they're definitely deserving of it in my opinion.
Well, and I think just at this time though, too, because a lot of the tag team buzz, it was either the Midnights or the Rock and Roll. You sprinkle in another team in there, like a Doom or Steiners, Southern Boys, whatever. But at this time,
Arn and Tully.
Right. But you get that three team, basically. And there, two were heels, one was face. You had to sprinkle in the Steiners in there. And I think they had some of their best work here in the early to mid 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Here in WCW / NWA.
I think Legion of Doom are going to be on most people's. I think the Steiners and Harlem and Harlem Heat and Midnight Express would be, to me, the four kind of WCW tag teams that you would think of mm-hmm. that have the most legitimate say-so, and we should be on a Mount Rushmore. Rock and Roll Express probably in that group too.
This will probably get a lot of heat with me, and rightfully so. I just never dug Rock and Roll Express.
Me either.
I just never got them. And I think a lot of, I'll put it this way. If it wasn't for the Rock and Roll Express, we wouldn't have the Rockers. If we wouldn't have the Rockers, we wouldn't have like the Hardy Boys. And if we didn't have the Hardy Boys, we wouldn't have the Young Bucks. That's my thought process behind it. I think it's accurate.
So who do we have to blame for the Young Bucks? The Hardy Boys?
Pretty much everybody underneath them. We'll blame the Hardy Boys.
Hardy Boys! I knew it was them all along! Them and the Young Bucks!
Motherfuckers! Did you... Oh, by the way, did you... We'll get into fucking weeds on this, too. Did you see Balding Buck and Pie Face Duck last night? On Dynamite?
I would have had to then have watched it. I don't watch it.
You could have been online and saw the
show. No, I did not.
Basically, they were characters portrayed with the Village People. They had, was it Nick Jackson? One of the Jacks. I don't care anyways because I don't like them. But one of them had the handlebar mustache. Another one had the little porn stash up here. They're all dyed brown or black or whatever, and their hair was long and blonde streaks and blah 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 blah.
I think they should bring in Mike Jackson and have him be their dad.
I think they should bring Reggie Jackson in and just beat him over the head with a baseball bat.
I'm for that.
Even if he's a Yankee, right?
Yeah.
I really don't know where we can transition from that. But I'm going to try. So we saw the Horsemen at the end of this pay-per-view. Arn selling his ass off physically, like facial-wise. We saw Elegante, the debut of Elegante.
And you know why this debut was absolutely perfect? He did not wrestle. In the six-man match, he never got in the ring.
No, he got in the ring.
He got in the ring, but not legally. He came in and like cleared house and then got back out. He never went in and like wrestled the whole time. He never got tagged in.
Right. But did you see the look that Arn, just the eyes, bug eyes when he comes into the ring?
Yeah.
Like, dude, Arn is legitimately the greatest cell worker, whatever you want to call it, of all time. I'll die on that mountain. I will absolutely die on that mountain.
Well, and then as usual, El Gigante's wrestling attire. was freaking ridiculous. It wasn't quite as bad as the hairy naked body suit that he got in WWE, but this looked like some type of shimmery, glittery tank top that he was wearing. It just looked, as Charles Barkley would say, terrible.
So let's... Rumor and innuendo has it that you actually have a matching one of those. You have like a onesie in your closet.
I know that Efren has like a black sparkly coat that looks like the one that Bobby Heenan used to wear.
And that's absolutely phenomenal.
Or
fabulous, whatever. insert adjective here, please.
Look for WrestleGamia coming to an ad-free show near you.
2 weeks, right?
I think so.
I think it's the week of, I think it's the second week. Well, let's, you know, this is a great podcast. I'm actually going to look it up now because it's still going to bug the shit out of me. It is.
I hope July, the theme song.
July 17th, 7 p.m. So go over to adfreeshows.com. We'll show them here. I don't care because they're absolutely phenomenal. Go over to adfreeshows.com and become a member right now to be able to be there for the debut of WrestleGamia.
I hope the theme song for WrestleGamia is as badass as the one that Efren made for Mike Chioda.
You know, I was legitimately going to ask Paulie, but I'm like, I'm not going to because it's for their stuff. As I was going to try to have to play that to put them over with the interview I did, but I'm like, nah, I'm not going to do that.
I can sing it right now if you guys want me to.
Go ahead. we got plenty of time. We have time to kill.
One, two, three. It's victory. It's Mike Chioda. All right. So
Mike Chioda. Okay. Anyways,
our main event. Let's talk about that. Are we there yet?
So of course we
are. Are we there yet?
Are we there yet, Dad? Before we get to the main event, I want to make one comment. We didn't talk about Doom, and we should.
Oh yeah.
Doom is so very, very underrated at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Simply, Ron Simmons is just a freaking beast.
Yeah, Doom has always been just an extremely badass team. And, you know, if they could have had a little bit more time, but they might be one of those tag teams you talk about. But they did beat Rock and Roll Express, which is a good thing.
Thank God.
And kept their titles.
And even Butch Reed is another one of those guys. We talked about Scott Steiner taking that singles run. I could have very well seen them put the strap on Butch Reed.
I heard he was over big in Florida.
I heard that too. Maybe that made me rumoring innuendo. I might have to check my Netflix to verify that, though. But anyways, main event. Sting and Ric Flair for the big gold. Sting comes out in the red, white, and blue gear. I actually have it. If you look, like I said, right there is the probably one of my favorite figures that I have.
You got to see him in that attire in Baltimore, right?
Unreal. I forget who's. I think Paulie was working that. And he legitimately, the line for that legitimately was the length of the whole facility. And rightfully so. The guy's a goddamn legend, Hall of Famer, whatever you want. Just absolutely phenomenal.
I got to meet him at the StarCast in Chicago, StarCast, I think, three. And yeah, he was super nice. He was in the red and black gimmick then.
Oh, the Wolfpack?
Yeah, kind of that. But, it kind of looked more like his TNA stuff, actually. I'm not
like
sure.
Like the Joker one?
Not Joker, but just kind of. I can't remember. His face may have been Crow Sting. But I remember him having that like long black coat with like red velvet, like cuffs. You know what you mean. Anyways, super, super good dude. And yes, the line was for him was long that day, too.
Did you like this? It's been a conversation for a lot of people, and we might have had the conversation before. I can't remember. My memory's not so good, obviously. Your favorite Sting, is it Surfer Sting? Is it Crow Sting? Is it TNA Sting?
Probably Crow Sting.
Yeah. I'm partial to this sting here, just a surface sting, just because you never know. He has so many different faces of Sting coming out. The gear. That's what I grew up watching too, is in this early time, seeing it again. And nothing against a Crow Sting. That's what I actually like excelled on when I was watching WCW there in 97, 98. Excuse me. The fandom era of the Monday Night War. But this match, it's going to be the highlight of a lot of people's moments on this pay-per-view. I get it. The build, this was probably about the only match that really had any build.
Yeah, it had a
legitimate
decent
build.
Yeah.
And well, I feel so, and they should, though. Two of the best of all time should have that build for this match, without question.
Well, and before we get into the match, what's most important? What's Nate wearing? Well, if you guys didn't get to watch, Nature Boy is in his baby blue robe with the baby blue tights, going all baby blue here against Sting at Great American Bash. It's the first thing whenever I go back and watch a Flair match. What's he wearing? What's the robe? What's the tights and the boots? What we got going on here? But he was going straight baby blue for this one.
Now, see, I'm more partial to the purple, personally. I like the purple robe. And I'm not saying it just because that's the one I've worn before in Baltimore. But
I've worn that robe too, yeah. It's a lot heavier than you would think.
They had that. I was with our Canadian friend there, and they had that, and they had the Oz poncho, you want to call it. And both of those were heavy as shit.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how heavy that shit would have been. And I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, if there's any other Ric Flair fans out there, not named Conrad Thompson, that can enlighten us on how, if that was the heaviest robe that he had. It had to be close.
Speaking of robes, let's get into this a little bit, because as we just watched on WWE Hidden Treasures or whatever that show's called, they went after they actually found the butterfly Flair robe, which has been Conrad's white whale for years now. And they finally found it, and this guy really fleeced Conrad's ass on that thing. I felt like jumped the price up to $60,000, and then had little Nate there trade in his, which is one of the most coveted Flair robes, the one that he had, which is the safari robe, what's considered the safari robe, the green one. Not my favorite robe. I don't think it's one of the prettier ones, but it is one of the older ones, and it's got a lot of historical, cachet to it. So they trade that in, but I did love the robe that Lil Nate got back. That gold one, thought was a beautiful robe. And then of course Conrad and the WWE get the creme de la creme, which is the black butterfly robe of Rick's. There are so many I like. I like the pink one that had like the dark pink lettering on it. It was like light pink and had like darker pink. And then I'm pretty prone to that one. I like that purple one too, from Starrcade 93 and all that. There's some really good ones, but this one he wore a lot too, this baby blue. And I think he wore this at one of the earlier Starrcades.
I want to say it had to be, was it the one against Harley maybe?
It may have been.
It was either that one I don't think it was Dusty. I think it was Harley at 83. But yeah, absolutely phenomenal. I would have liked to see it end differently than a roll up, but
yeah,
I'm sure Sting didn't hold it for very long.
This is just, this is one of the bitches that people have about Flair matches. They call him a routine man. Brett always bitched about it. He's going to do this, he's going to do that, and then he does this. Well, Brett does the same shit too. Brett, Russian leg sweep, then off the second rope with the elbow. They all have their routines. But I will say this is one of the ways, one of Flair's cards that he played multiple times to lose a title. Mm. Was just the old cradle roll up out of the figure four.
Yeah. And you know, we'll get into that in just a moment with some listeners' questions, but overall, on the Justin Davis star rating, what would you give this pay-per-view?
How many stars is the best?
2,400. No, I'm joking.
Are we on a Dave Meltzer infinite star scale?
Only in a Tokyo. Oh, wait. No, you know what? Only at the Great American Ballpark.
Okay. If we're going to get a five-star match, Mr. Meltzer likes to say, I would give this main event a 3. How many licks does it take till you get to the center of a...
To
3. Up. I would go 3.
Well, that'll just absolutely rock me to sleep tonight. Thank you for that, Justin.
What it what it lacks is one of the main things it lacks is surprise. I think everyone going into that main event knew what was going to happen.
They knew Sting was going to win. Yeah, I would give them 3.5 stars. Just because I would have given them 4, but I'm along the same lines. You kind of knew, same what you said, is you knew what was going to happen. And I'm like, not that I was objecting to Sting winning.
No.
But it's like, come on, you got to have some sort of smash finish, bring the horseman out, whatever the hell you want. But it's,
well, they tried, but the fearsome El Gigante was there to hold them off.
Well, no, he was holding off Ole Anderson. Mm-hmm. He was handcuffed to Ole Anderson. Or Ole Anderson was handcuffed, whatever the hell you want to say it. But one guy that isn't handcuffed right now is up at the ring waiting for us right now. Yeah, you want right now? Okay, let's send it up to the ring right now to Mr. Rich Palladino.
It's listener questions.
All right. We have 4 questions from our good friend, Devin Dowling. So go over and follow him on the Twitter gimmick.
Is Money Mike and Devin trying to outdo each other? I think Money Mike had like 3 questions last week. And now Devin's like, fuck him. I'll have 4.
I will actually. it doesn't surprise me if he does it. I made sure to send it out multiple times to see if Money Mike would get it in. But I think he's on vacation.
He's on vacation. He's in Maryland. Yeah.
Oh, Maryland. Look. Ocean City.
Yeah.
So you go over. That popped me. Go over and follow Devin at DevinND19 on the Twitter gimmick. Good follow, good friend. So he has 4 questions, like I said. First question that he has is, would Mark Callis... Mean Mark Callis, that is, have been been successful in the WWF with this gimmick that he has at this pay-per-view and Paul E. as a manager? I say no.
I say no.
Just say, I don't think this gimmick would have lasted
Mean Mark Callis, that reminds me of like Big Bully Busick.
Or what was the other one? Broad Street Bully or whatever the hell it was in WCW. But yeah. I just, could Paulie make it better? Probably. But you don't need a dude like that right now. Especially 90. I don't think it would have transmitted very well to the WWF.
Even if it would have worked, it would have never worked as well as The Undertaker. So.
Oh, no way. Midpoint. No. So... Well, short, sweet, to the point. What the hell? His next question is, if Sting won this with a scorpion or a death drop before he pinned Flair, would it have been a bigger impact, or was the roll-up the correct way to go?
Well, we kind of talked about that earlier. Like, I'm just... Yeah. That roll-up finish, that figure four, was so beaten like a dead horse by that point.
But it was very weak, though. That was the problem. If it was a little bit tighter...
Oh, yeah. Maybe. Sting kind of did fuck that roll up too.
If it was a little bit tighter, a little bit more snug, then maybe. But when you have this build up for this match, for this pay per view, even more so for this main event, I would have rather seen him win with his fucking finisher. Or one of them, anyway.
Yeah, you mean the sharpshooter?
This is your Bret Hart mention of the week.
You thought I was going to get out of here without it,
no,
didn't you?
No, I know. You waited to the last. Well, you didn't wait to the absolute last possible moment, but you waited close to it. And I give you kudos for that. Kudos, my friend. But I would have seen him a lot to do with the Scorpion Death Drop, personally. Do it a couple times. Do it twice. You don't need to do it just once. You got to do it twice. But yeah, I would have rather see him do it with the finisher instead of the very weak roll up. So lastly, well, second last anyways, from Devin is
we're halfway through our lightning round with Devin Dowling.
Yeah. Next week is going to be Monday Mike's lightning round. He'll probably have like six questions next week. there you go, Mike. There's your challenge right there. Come up with six questions. I'm pretty sure he could. But we have Devin. I always call him Mike. Devin asked, what was your favorite match on the pay-per-view? We briefly touched on this before we started recording. I had to go strictly with Doom and Rock and Roll Express strictly because Doom won. I love Doom. Doom was so underrated in my eyes. They should have been to the moon and back. Rock and Roll Express, not so much. I never dug it. I won't go as far as saying that they're overrated. I won't go that far. I just think that they were not as good as people give them credit for. They're still good. They're still good workers. I will give them that. They still pop the crowd. They have a great presence. I just didn't care for them. Similar to the Young Bucks.
Yeah, both of our favorite matches are tag team matches. Mine would be the Midnight Express match that they had with Tracy Smothers and Mr. Armstrong. I thought that was just really good, classic Midnight Express match. You know, get the heat on the baby face by holding him in there way too long and not letting him tag and letting him have the hot tag, letting the crowd go crazy, and then snaking out of there with a victory. And anytime I see Cornette, I get happy. So.
But do you think I wanted to ask you this before when we were talking about the Midnight Express match or the which formation. Do you think that they would have been, and you can either do Bobby and Stan or Bobby and Dennis, either one. Do you think they would have been as over as they were without Cornette?
Hell no.
No, you don't think no?
No. They wouldn't have been hardly over at all.
They were like peas and carrots.
Yep.
Yeah. I always wonder that, man. And not everybody are Jim Cornette fans. I get it. I think
you know what I say to them? Thank you. Fuck you. Bye, motherfuckers.
Well, if we could end it right now, I will do it. I would do it with that, but we can't.
We got one more fucking Devin Dowling question.
We got one more goddamn question. I'm joking. Thank you, Devin. We're just kidding. He wanted to ask me one so he could say, fuck you.
Goodbye. Yeah, thank you. Fuck you. Bye. Okay.
Yeah, to Justin. But I will ask you, I'll get your opinion on this as well. But he asked me what my favorite tag team back in the day was. And I'm pretty sure I know what yours is already, but you already mentioned him. But I'm going to go with Edge and Christian strictly for the fact that the first wrestler that I ever met was Edge in a Cracker Barrel in Buffalo, New York. And since then, he's been aces in my book, him and Christian. They're still both going now. So I respected. See, there's a difference between liking and respecting my book as far as wrestling goes. You don't have to like every person, but you can respect them. I respect the hell out of the Dudleys and the Hardys. I don't necessarily like them, but I respect them. But on the other side of the coin, I absolutely love and respect Edge and Christian. So we'll just go with that. I'm going to say that I'm just saying right now, your heart is the Heart Foundation, right?
Yeah. Brett and Jim would be number one. Number two would be Owen and Jim, the New Heart Foundation. They were right up there.
Son of a bitch. Well, there's number two.
Number three would be Bulldog and Owen.
But see, the thing is, would you consider that a Heart Foundation? because I don't know. Technically they are hearts.
They were called the New Heart Foundation. Owen and Jim.
But that's the only tag team or only tag team.
And you know what happens when they put new in front of shit.
That was good though. That was the exception to it.
Well,
was Owen it? Well, yeah. Maybe.
I mean, look at New York.
Damn you. Well, you couldn't go one show without mentioning the Hearts. You couldn't go one show without shitting on Rochester, their trash plates. And you certainly couldn't go.
I feel bad for the old York. I feel bad for the old York because now they got to get stained with the New York.
Well, they're north. They're more towards Canada. I think they're part of Canada now. Because they're so old. Anyways, I know I'm sure they're absolutely loving this banter back and forth. Absolutely loving it.
Oh, we got more Devin Dowling questions.
Oh, wait, hold on. I'm getting a message right now. Wait, hold on. We're going to go to DM there. Pondwater Dave. Nope.
Oh, God.
No, he's.
Is this the first show that Pondwater Dave hasn't been featured in a while? He's gonna be hurt when he hears this stuff.
He's gonna be upset. I think. What the hell is he? Oh, God damn that!
Especially way. After he got his new nickname given to him last week. Oh, little enforcer.
Little enforcer. I said, "Hey, I know a guy." You saw that. You were in the feed. He's like, "Hey, I know a guy that can get you a shirt for that." I swear to God, if you, I'm trying to get you over on that, man, because you came up with that.
So if he comes to Top Guy weekend, we're gonna have to get him a shirt. Little enforcer.
I don't know if I think he's got to work. I don't think he can get off of work.
Oh.
I think I talked to him about
nobody it. Else can deliver the Cheetos that fucking couple days down there in bumfuck Mississippi.
Yeah. And I have to officially, I know I did it online, but I have to officially apologize. I did not
for
realize,
calling him a Mississippian.
Yeah. I did not realize he spent the majority of his life in Texas. I apologize.
Yeah. He was a Von Erich fluffer for years as a small child.
Well, yeah.
Well, you didn't know that? That's why we got. That's how he got his big break in the business. He was fluffing for the Von Erichs.
Was he the fluffer?
Well, yeah, he had to get their roll of bologna fluffed up before they went out for the girls to look at him.
Okay.
That's how that went.
I heard it was. I heard he always made the run for baby powder and tequila.
Well, he needs both.
No kidding. And on that note, we want to thank each and every one of you for listening this week. Coming up next week, we are going to be going over and going back to the great year. I got to pull it up. Great year of 2002, July 15th of 2002, to be exact, is when Mr. Eric Bischoff debuted.
I'm back and better than ever.
On Raw as the Raw general manager. So we're going to go over that. So if you want to be part of the show, just like Devin Dowling was this week with five questions, you want to outdo him, Money Mike, with six questions or more, Money Mike, and ask us any of your questions on Eric Bischoff, certainly you can send them over to either at JD2040 or at underscore ringside rant.
Or at Lauren Yaffe. She probably has most of the answers to any Eric Bischoff question.
Well, that too. She can just call him up and ask him herself. So either way.
She'll get in her, like, I feel like she has a box under her bed that's just full of, like, Eric Bischoff, like, newspaper clippings and
bits of hair.
Maybe like one of those voodoo dolls.
Yeah, but they won't. But she doesn't have any of those pins in them, though.
She might for Mrs. B.
No, she's a lovely woman. How dare you? So, like I said, if you want to be a part of the show next week, next Friday, on Eric Bischoff debuting on Monday Night Raw, send your tweets, DMs, whatever, over to Justin at JD2040 or at me at underscore ringside rant. Follow us on the Instagram at underscore ringside rant. Make sure you subscribe wherever you're hearing this great podcast, including the Full Press Radio Network, as well as the Shining Wizards Radio Network, as well as Breathe, the Visionaries Global Media Network as well. So appreciate those three fantastic platforms that we're on. Absolutely fantastic people involved with that as well. We're glad to be part of that. But if you want to rock some great, great Ringside Rant merchandise, head over to ringsiderant.wolfapparel.com. We are absolutely in the works. I am waiting on the one, the only, the great, great artist himself, Mr. JD Hoop, for our new shirt design. It is going to be in the format of Halloween Havoc, just in time for the Halloween season. I know we're in July, so how dare you?
Mm-hmm. You should see my mask that I'm going for Halloween.
You wearing it now?
No, well, never mind. My joke. You stole my joke, you fuck. I'm broken.
He's broke. Me. Oh my God.
We got to get off here while RJ still has a voice. I think he almost just had an aneurysm right there.
Oh my God. I think I just. Oh, seriously.
I think he busted some blood vessels in his eyes.
Oh my eyes. I'm dying over here. I have nobody to give me mouth to mouth, just like when Tony choked on fucking ice cube.
Now you sound like John Laurinaitis.
What are you talking about, brother? What are you talking about? Oh my God. Anyways, thank you each and every one of you for tuning in this week and also attempting to hear me die over here.
RJ's desperately out of time. His voice is gone. We'll see you next week.
And he's dead. And he's dead. One, two. Anyways, thank you very much. Make sure you tell your
friends. Ask another question.
Ask another question. I'm going to die. Anyways, thank you guys. Tell your friends, tell your family. See you next week right here on the Ringside Rant.